I set one goal. I tweeted one goal last night. I don't care if they beat the Spurs. Just don't blow an ACL. Just come away with your health last
night.
No
Achilles, no legs, no ankles.
Right, no Teddy Bridgewater situation. Successful night.
They're 1-0 then, as far as we're concerned.
We thought after the first Vikings game until.
That's true.
Oh, that's the way to go.
With the opening bell.
Want to ring the bell?
Jang had it knocked away. Powell tapped it away again. There's Patty Mills in the middle of that. Up to Manu. Rudy Gay!
Yeah, I mean, there's going to be an excuse every night if that's the road, you know, that you go down, but that's not what we want to do. You know, we have to take a look at the film, try to learn from it, and be better the next time.
Didn't rebound like we were capable of, and they got to what they wanted to get to in the offensive end. And all in all, I think that was the game. We turned the ball over late when we can't do that. Be better on what, Friday?
I've got bad news. Bad news for anyone, whether it's you or me or fans who want this thing to be immediately great with this new Timberwolves.
What's your bad news for us?
It's not going to be immediately great is my bad news. It's going to be a feeling out and gelling process that probably takes weeks. If you go and look at some of the other collections of talent that have been assembled in the offseason and then thrust out in late October, early November.
Mm-hmm.
The two examples I can think of, and I went back just to check to see if my recollection was correct. The 2010-11 Miami Heat, which was a Hall of Fame collection of talent,
that
right?
That was slightly better than this collection,
maybe
yes.
The greatest player since Michael Jordan, or maybe of all time in LeBron James in his prime. Dwayne Wade's going to the Hall of Fame.
Just a little bit superior.
Chris Bosh. Mm-hmm. That was a supreme collection of talent.
Mm-hmm.
It took them a month before they figured it out. They were actually 9-8 in their first 17 games, and then they won a bunch of games. Then they won like 10 in a row or something.
I remember the panic about that.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Then in this town, it's a decade and a half ago now, it's the last time the Wolves had a viable basketball team, the 03-04 Wolves, the greatest season in franchise history. We remember all the high moments, right? The Nuggets series, the first round win over the Nuggets, the second round win, game seven, bring the Clips, bring the Uzis. We remember that finished product. And if Sam Cassell had been healthy, maybe they play in the NBA Finals.
Mm-hmm.
Well, rewind all the way back to the beginning of the year, late October into November. That team didn't really click until December. They also started 9-8. And they lost to some bad Eastern Conference teams early on. There was a game where they scored like 74 points against the 76ers.
Yep.
Although the Sixers were decent still in like 2003. So if it takes Kevin Garnett in his prime and LeBron in his prime and new collections of talent and veteran Cassell and Sprewell,
yep.
If it takes those guys over a month to figure it out, we're probably going to have to wait several weeks before this team looks like it should look like.
It's been 13 years. I've got no patience left. Let's go now. Let's see wins now. I got no patience.
So you're done.
13 years. You know what? After last night, I'm out. I'm done.
Wow.
They're going to miss the playoffs. They're going to miss the playoffs. It's all over. It's through. In all seriousness, here's the one thing to piggyback off your point, too, is this. And this was brought up on the ESPN telecast last night a couple of times. I think the thing that we're going to see here that's going to be an evolutionary process and it's going to take some time and the buy-in is going to be slower than the fan base wants and the head coach wants and perhaps Jimmy Butler wants, the buy-in to play defense. Because I heard this a couple times in people talking about the Wolves yesterday. You can talk all you want about we're a really good defensive team and we work hard. There's a difference between actually having your players say that and actually having your players, all of your players, by the way, not one or two, do that. And so I think the process itself that you're talking about, not just the gelling, but also the getting to where Tibbs wants this team to go defensively, is not going to happen on Friday night, for instance.
Yeah, I mean, you just watch the way that Jimmy Butler plays two ways for 35, however many minutes he played last night, and Taj Gibson. What they're doing defensively and what they're doing even just some of the nuances offensively and coming off screens and the way that they get to where they want on the court and like just their level of intensity defensively and just even off the ball offensively. There's a huge gap between those two guys last night and then Andrew Wiggins and Karl-Anthony Towns. So I do think it helps that you have those guys on the court now raising the bar and setting a new expectation for what should happen. Like, there was two or three times, and maybe even more than this, I just noticed two or three times, where Jimmy Butler would ream somebody out for not moving over fast enough on,
yeah, which
on
is
a rotation.
Which is fantastic.
Now, there was a period, so they were bad in the first quarter. They allowed like 34 points in the third quarter, I think. I'd have to go back and look at the box score, but there was maybe a 5 or 6 minute chunk late third, early fourth, where they were rotating, they were helping, and it looked like great Tom Thibodeau. Yes.
Rotate!
Ice!
Rotate, Jimmy!
It
Jimmy!
Looked like what Tom Thibodeau.
I love you, Jimmy!
God.
Andrew, I thought, played very well. You know, he's still, you know, defensively, I think he could do more. And he's going to have to for us to be successful.
Praise for Wiggins.
Wait, and now Phil Mackey praises the play of Andrew Wiggins from last night's game, game number one of the season. Go ahead.
For the record, now that he's making really big boy money, I think maybe now it's acceptable to criticize him once in a while. But Andrew Wiggins was magnificent offensively last night. And the thing I noticed, and if you look at the box score, it jives with this eye test. His shot selection felt really good last night. He took 14 shots, and all but two of them were from three-point range or inside 15 feet.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where he should live. He can knock down threes at least at a league average rate, maybe even higher, and he feels really comfortable on that wing extended. And he can get anything he wants in the paint. His spin move, I mean, he can get to the rim at will.
That spin move is really, really impressive.
Yes, and so what? Even off the ball, backdoor cutting and flashing open in the paint. There's no reason for him to really ever settle for a 20-foot jumper with a guy's hand in his face. And last night, he only took two, what I would say are like long two-point, 18 to 22-foot jumpers. And he's efficient. So efficiency matters when there's a time limit on the game and a capped number of shots, basically, that you're going to take. You can't take 15 crappy shots as a team and expect to beat a well-oiled, ball-moving machine like San Antonio.
This is one game. There are 81 more to come. So this is small sample size. I get that. But does it say more about where Jeff Teague is at in the learning process for this team that he didn't play in the fourth quarter? Or does it say more about the fact that Tibbs played Tyus Jones, if I'm not mistaken, not part of the fourth quarter, the entire fourth quarter?
Yeah.
That surprised me.
I think it speaks to both. Jeff Teague was struggling defensively last night. And I don't know if that's because, like, he's not used to playing with the guys he was playing with, but that wasn't an excuse for Tyus Jones. If you look at offensively, Tyus Jones only scored like 2 or 4 points and, you know, dished out a couple assists, but he was a plus, I want to say like a plus 10 or 17 or something. And Jeff Teague was a minus double digits in that game. So some of that's who you play with and the runs and the ebbs and the flows, but yeah, they were better with Tyus Jones on the floor last night.
They definitely were.
For sure.
Last thing, too. The Spurs, okay? I'm not Mr. Hoops here, but the appreciation I have for watching a franchise, and I don't care the sport, the appreciation I have for watching a franchise that is that well coached and has an infrastructure where you can have two of your star players not playing and you basically don't miss a thing.
Yeah.
To watch a Popovich coach team and what he has instilled there is, and I know they're not a sexy team, and I suppose that at times they could be described as sort of bland and boring, but they are so impressive in how they can take basically anybody and they can mold that player into the type of player that they want.
Yeah, and you say, you know, last night, yeah, they were missing the two stars. Could I even zoom out further and say that Tim Duncan retired 2 years ago, one of the greatest basketball players of all time, left your team. Tony Parker, Hall of Fame point guard, and Kawhi Leonard is going to go to the Hall of Fame at some point, barring an injury. And they still look like that.
That's
like,
what I'm
they
saying.
They still look like that. They're still moving the ball and playing defense, and it's a crazy gold standard organization. It is. And, you know, it was probably unrealistic to even expect. Like, the Wolves were, I think, a 1.5-point underdog.
You guys both and predicted victories.
I thought they'd win the game. I thought San Antonio wouldn't be able to overcome that kind of loss with a Kawhi Leonard. But, you know, Rudy Gay was good last night.
I saw it clearly.
You did, yes.
I saw it clearly, boys.
The basketball,
I saw it clearly.
The new basketball whisperer.
Something
Judd
like
Zolgad.
That.
Ding, ding.
The most impressive thing to me about Teddy this whole time has been the way that he's reacted to being in all the meetings and seeing the film after practices and trying to coach us up. I think that's the biggest thing because, you know, for me that's huge. I love when guys are trying to help me get better, and he was one of those guys that wanted to help in any way he could, and I think that ultimately helped him too.
He's worked extremely hard to get to this point where he can get back out on the practice field. You know, we still don't know where it's going to go or, you know, where that's going to lead to. But I think everybody feels good for him because they know what kind of kid he is and how hard he's worked.
All right, Phil Mackey. Part of your night last night was spent on, if I'm not mistaken, KSTP.com, breaking down, no pun intended, the Vikings practice, and Teddy Bridgewater.
That's a dirty pun.
And Teddy Bridgewater. So give us the review of what you saw clearly from the KSDP Eyewitness News cameras.
Yeah, I really liked the way Teddy moved on those rollouts outside the pocket, throwing off of the surgically repaired leg at one point, I believe, and dropping back probably in some of the same formations he was in during the incident from 14 months ago. What I didn't see was some of the situations you can't simulate, which would be like a 260-pound, no body fat edge rusher chasing him for his life. Maybe they should just do that. Like, have Danielle Hunter run as fast as he can with no restrictions. Like, if you catch him, you can do whatever you want.
No need with this O-line.
That's a good point, actually.
Why bother?
It is a brick wall, yeah.
Oh boy.
It might as well be a 7-on-7 drill like you see in training camp.
Yeah.
Just drop back, float that thing in there.
I'm just glad that you were excited by what you saw.
So that film that was captured by KSTP, they're probably not grabbing like 11-on-11 stuff, right? They're not able to film that stuff.
They can't stick around for that.
But basic stuff. From what I saw, that leg looks 110%. I don't even know why the knee brace is required.
So would you play him against Baltimore on Sunday or wait until Cleveland in England?
Basically, if Case Keenum throws an incomplete pass I don't like against the Ravens, Teddy Bridgewater's in the game.
You go to the bullpen?
Yes.
Bring in the right-hander?
Teddy's in the game. That's how NFL coaches should signal for quarterback changes. You walk out like a baseball manager and put the right arm up.
And then we'd wait for the warm-up throws.
The guy's warming up in the bullpen.
He gets warm-up throws.
You stall so we can get the warm-up throws. Yeah. Should we get Chip in here
yes,
next?
Yes, let's do that.
All right, Chip Scoggins from the Star Tribune and StarTribune.com. We have a jam-packed show, Lou Nanny. It's a Lou Nanny Thursday, so he'll join at 10 o'clock today. Jason Stark to talk playoffs and maybe some Twins off season, 11:30. Matthew Collar from Winter Park at 12:15. It's Mackie and Judd.
Mackie and Judd are back.
They're ready to go.
It's a relief. It's like, okay, let's go.
On 1500 ESPN.
I be riding through the town. My music.
And this portion of Mackie and Judd is sponsored by Robert W. Baird & Company.
Tarantino going to roll right, throwing into the flat. It's deflected and broken up. The Gamecocks win it. The Gamecocks win it in Knoxville, 15-9.
There's a segment of Tennessee fans who desperately want John Gruden. He was in town over the weekend before the Monday night game, and I think he flirted with that job a couple of years ago. His wife was a cheerleader there.
This is a rivalry game. It means a lot to a lot of people, including the people in this organization and the people that play in this game. We've had some real struggles at times with this team, and this team we have a lot of respect for. Butch Jones has done a nice job there, and this team could be very easily 5-1.
So easily. Chip, wow. you want to talk about the Bears or the boat?
Let's talk about the Bears. Bears are the boat.
How is your head coach still employed there? I mean, how did they not fire him during the bye week? How did they not fire him after last week?
You heard Saban. He's doing a great job.
So we haven't scored an offensive touchdown in 10 quarters.
did you almost swear?
10 quarters.
I just thought, we haven't scored a...
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So, but you know, no touchdown in 10 quarters, and now we get to go to Alabama. So,
good luck.
Yeah.
I got a question for you. So, football has become increasingly a thinking coach's game in a lot of ways, right? Like the Sean McVays who just grind film throughout their 20s and craft offenses. Have you guys ever met a cerebral guy named Butch?
No.
Like a cerebral. Has a guy named Butch ever out-coached anybody?
No. And his sideline demeanor reeks of a guy named Bush. I mean, he's just red-faced, over-emotional, just can't handle clock management.
Whoa, what? Go back on all those things?
Yeah,
I think I know a guy that prowls the sideline for the Vikings who is red-faced.
He's far more cerebral than Butch Jones.
Yeah.
Mike Zimmer
clock defenses all week. Clock management can be a problem sometimes. But how do you not fire the guy?
I don't know. Like, well,
what are they waiting for?
Unless you don't have anybody on staff that you think could hold the thing together for 6 weeks.
Listen, I know a guy who is at a directional school in Florida right now that would love a second shot at Tennessee.
No, I want Dave Aranda. That's my guy.
Who's Dave?
Defense coordinator for LSU, was the defense coordinator at Wisconsin for a couple years, and then he left. He's the highest paid coordinator in college football. I think he makes $2 million.
Wow.
And so he'll be the guy at the top of, in terms of assistant coaches, he'll be the guy at the top of pretty much everybody's list this year.
Do you want to talk about the Timberwolves' effort last night against the Spurs, or do you want to talk about Teddy Bridgewater? Choose your own adventure here. We'll do
we can start wherever you want to. We can do Wolves first. It was very ragged.
Mm-hmm.
There was not much flow. And maybe we all got, duped into thinking, hey, they added all these pieces and it's going to work from game one. I was probably in that camp. I thought they would.
Against the Spurs,
against
by the way.
Against the Spurs, yeah. They're clearly going to need some time to kind of figure this thing out. They look like, at times, five guys, five cabs, where they just weren't on the same page and it was just kind of clunky. I didn't think Cat played well at all. I don't know where he wound up point wise, but there was just kind of, I don't say he's out of control, but it was just kind of, you know, sloppy.
It felt like no one really knew when to be assertive.
Yeah.
Like Jimmy Butler was assertive a few times, then Wiggins in the second half finally said, okay, like in the fourth quarter, I'm going to take some shots, I'm going to get to the free throw line. But it was almost like they, and this is totally natural when you have a bunch of star players and guys coming over, like Jeff Teague has never played with this collection, and for them to look like, okay, we want to share the ball and defer, but we also want to get ours, and that takes a lot of time to gel together.
And maybe, I mean, it's probably realistic that was going to happen, that this team's going to look a lot different, play a lot different in January or February or whatever, I would think, than what they are now. I mean, there were interesting things. I mean, obviously, Teague not playing in the fourth quarter, that raises your eyebrows.
But
I
think to what Phil said, I think that's why he didn't play.
Because they were completely
because
out of sorts.
But I think your hope, if in Tibbs' world, I think his hope is if they're going to play a team like the Spurs in that first game, and there is any chance that they're going to look cohesive, it's going to start with the point guard.
Correct.
And when it doesn't start with him, I think there's a disappointment there, and that's my guess about why he felt that Tyus could play that entire quarter, was because he felt that he was not getting what he thought he would see or wants to see, probably more importantly for
the league. Yeah, and with that second unit, I mean, obviously Boz didn't do anything, but I thought Bielitsa and Crawford were really good.
Yeah,
Crawford's going to give him. He's going to be a big piece player for him. I think.
Yeah, and he's going to be a little streaky. Like, he's not the most efficient scorer, but Butler and Crawford can just kind of create offense out of thin air. I mean, there was a play where the shot clock was winding down, and they are moving the ball, and it winds up in Jamal Crawford's hands out on the right wing. With like 3 seconds to go on the shot clock, and you're thinking, if this was any other incarnation of the Wolves bench the last 15 years, the ball would either A, not be shot, or it would be like rejected and there'd be a 5-on-2 fast break.
Yeah.
And he just lightning quick gets into the lane and gets a ball off the glass and puts it in for two with the shot clock expiring. He can create offense. Jimmy Butler, out of nowhere, can get to the lane, spin move, create offense, distribute.
The thing I like, you said distribute. I thought Butler did a nice job passing and setting guys up.
He only took like 8 shots the whole game.
Yeah, and that's the one thing. And
what if he's like Mike Miller and he's going to come here and he's just
not
going to
shoot
for 3 years?
Not going to shoot. Don't worry about it.
But that's one thing that Tibbs had talked about a lot, that people talked about, with Rubio's loss, who's going to set guys up? And he said, well, Butler's better than that than people probably give him credit for. You talk about, his scoring and his defense, but he's a really good distributor. And I think we saw some of that last night.
Bench-wise, what's it going to take, or is it not going to happen at some point for Boz to become consistent? Because when Boz is going well, Boz is really good. But he didn't look, last night, he didn't look in tune with the game at all. And that's the one thing that has to drive Tibbs absolutely crazy is you'll go through these spurts where you're like, this guy's really pretty good. He's going to give you something. And then he'll have an equal amount of games where he's sort of, for lack of a better term, detached from the game.
Yeah, I thought he looked disinterested last night for whatever reason. And I think probably this is just who he is as a player, that you're going to have stretches where he can carry your second unit and stretches where you're like, what is wrong with this guy? He's not doing anything.
Well, I think Andrew Wiggins and Shabazz Muhammad, and this is a credit to Wiggins that he wound up having a good game offensively, regardless of what I'm about to say. Those guys, with Shabazz with the second unit and Wiggins with the first unit, they could pretty much, up until this year, if they wanted to take things over in terms of like the shot volume and just dribbling the ball around, they could kind of do that. All right, who else on the second unit besides Shabazz last year was really gonna take things over? And unless Zach LaVine was coming off the bench at one point, but now Jamal Crawford is the main ball handler, or Tyus Jones, and at some point maybe Aaron Brooks. But for now, Andrew Wiggins to sort of defer to Jimmy Butler and even Jeff Teague to a certain extent, and Shabazz having to defer a little bit to Jamal Crawford and find those new fits. It's just going to, I hate to keep going back to it, but it might take a month or 2 months before this thing looks like it's supposed to look like.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that at all, because you can't just throw this many pieces together and think,
and play three preseason games
and think it's going to be a well-oiled machine. Now, maybe that is an excuse. Some of the things we saw last night, guys not really being, Boz just didn't look in it at all.
Grab a rebound.
The defense can improve starting Friday.
Exactly. You can improve, but in terms of the offensive flow and knowing, hey, how do I play off this guy and kind of what the pecking order is in terms of shots and that type of thing and roles, that's just going to take time. We may not like it. We want it to happen game one, but I'm not sure that's really realistic.
So the most interesting thing to me about that point is this. Patience from fans is nice, but okay, if you're patient, that's great. And if you're not too bad, it's patience from the coach.
Yeah.
Because he's going to be the one. There are some coaches who you could say, it'll be December. We'll get there. It's going to be fine. Tim strikes me as the type of guy who it's going to be very interesting that now that he has his team in place, and so now that these parts are his parts, I'm very curious to see if they do, let's say, a scuffle for 2 months, how he goes about accepting that or not accepting that, in which case it could get to be interesting.
I felt like he was fairly tranquil last night. He didn't stand out on the broadcast. Early last year, and we had never really seen him coach before, so maybe we're just like used to it now. It stood out the first couple weeks of the season. Like, whoa, this, holy cow, he's screaming for 48 minutes. I didn't really notice him last night. So maybe he was a little bit more accepting and tranquil when it comes to...
That's one game, though. Yeah. A month and a half in, if they're still scuffling, he might not be.
And the one thing I go back to, this veteran point guard that you brought in, you didn't play in the fourth quarter of a game that's right there for the taking. Yep. That's something to pay attention to. Was it just a one-off, or was this something that he saw that alarmed him?
If he felt that Teague didn't run the point properly, and he more importantly felt that Teague didn't play defense properly, that's going to be the interesting thing, because you are going to go through periods where Teague is trying to adjust to your system. So the answer is probably not to say you're not going to play in the fourth quarter, right? So that's the one thing, to your point, Chip. It's one game, and I totally get that. Yeah. But it is going to be a process for Teague, because I'm sure in Tibbs' system, the point guard position is incredibly demanding for him to learn that.
And it's also, you're probably playing the one team that's always looks like a well-oiled machine, no matter who's in there.
How fun are they to watch?
The way they share the ball and just their offense, the execution, and making the extra pass, they're just dynamite.
It's also worth noting, Andrew Wiggins only played 30 minutes last night, and it wasn't foul trouble. He didn't commit a foul the entire game. So if I remember right, he sat in the third quarter, like mid to late third quarter, just the standard rotation where he comes out of the game. And he didn't go back in the game until like 5 minutes to go, because they went on that run and closed the gap. Crawford got hot. At one point, when they brought Wiggins back in, they finished the game with Karl Anthony Towns at the five, or at least they played a large chunk of the last few minutes. Towns was the five, and you had basically four shooting guards or in a point guard. You had Butler Wiggins, and Crawford on the court with Tyus Jones. But we sit here and we talk about Jeff Teague didn't finish out the game. Andrew Wiggins played 10 fewer minutes than he would have last year. because he just wasn't fitting defensively, and you trusted other guys in the game at that time.
Well, that's the thing. You have a bench now that if a guy gets hot, if Crawford gets hot, you don't necessarily have to just play Wiggins and Towns till they drop.
In the third quarter, I want to say Andrew and Butler were both out for extended periods of time. In that, because in the third, I looked and they weren't in there. But you know what? If he's going to find a way to play his bench and rest guys, good. I'm absolutely fine with that.
Yeah.
In game one, you do not need to be taking your potential star or your star players and playing them a ton.
Yeah, and he's talked about how important like Belly is to them too in terms of his shooting, and I think we saw some of that last night. What do you have? 9 points.
Yeah, he got to the rim a bunch too, which is, well, not a bunch. Like he hit 3 or 4
I
shots.
I think there's something there.
But there's something there that he likes, and I think he's going to be a key guy for him.
Yeah. Let's come back and talk some Theodore Bridgewater.
Hey, Teddy.
Here. Hey, Teddy, at practice yesterday for the first time. And Chip Scoggins, we can get into some Gopher football. Demry Croft, maybe the starting quarterback going forward here before the end of the hour. We can get into that. Lou Nanny at 10 o'clock. I'm honestly just looking ahead to 1 o'clock when the lunch window opens up for you and I. And there's two main things happening at McDonald's right now that are of importance. Number one, the $1 any size soft drink. So I don't know why you wouldn't just get a large. Diet Coke is usually my drink of choice when it comes to the soft drink center at McDonald's. And the delicious 100% all white meat buttermilk crispy tenders, Judd.
That sounds absolutely delicious. And it sounds so good that, you know what? I'm going to skip fill the 4-piece and 6-piece because I could get those, but I'm going to go right for the 10-piece. And I'm going to mix them, Chip Scoggins. Listen up, with the 7 sauce options that I can try out. That's
Don't
right.
Let him push his
7
sauce agenda on you,
options.
Chip.
I'm going to suggest for you the sweet and sour, honey mustard, spicy buffalo, and honey sauces. And Chip, you will mix that with the $1 soft drink as well to get your lunch today, and you'll enjoy it because it's so good.
Don't let him push his agenda on you. But, you know, we do recommend McDonald's buttermilk crispy tenders and the $1 any
agenda.
Size soft drink. Mackie and Judd.
Phil Mackey, Judd Zolgad.
Now, boys, what did we say about threatening each other at breakfast?
Mackey and Judd on 1500 ESPN.
It's exciting for all of us to see him out there. It's a testament to his hard work. It's an incredible feat. What he went through 14 months ago to be out there back on the practice field with us today says a lot, not only about his work ethic, but you know his character and the way he's approached this whole situation.
The most impressive thing to me about Teddy this whole time has been the way that he's reacted to being in all the meetings and seeing the film after practices and trying to coach us up. I think that's the biggest thing because, you know, for me that's huge. I love when guys are trying to help me get better. And he was one of those guys that wanted to help in any way he could. And I think that ultimately helped him too.
Sing it, Chipper. Turn it on, sing it.
Hit that high note, Chipper. Come on, get in there.
They should play this. When he comes back, they got to play this in the stadium, right?
I think you have to. Or maybe a live rendition of it.
Have the kid do the Gallo horn, for God's sake.
Yeah.
And that's good.
I think he should sing it live.
Just like blaring when he comes in.
He's going to wind up coming in. They're going to make him a backup at some point after the bye. And he'll probably come in to replace Case Keenum during a game, right?
That's what I think.
I would think, you know, if there's no injury to Case, I think it'd be just... If he's ineffective, throws 3 picks, and hey, we need a spark.
In fact, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go to the schedule right now. I'm going to find that game.
But I think you play Case this week. You play him in London. Then you have the bye.
Yep.
And then you see where you're at, and if they should, you know, they should be 6-2, and you still, you know, you stick with Case, and then either injury or ineffectiveness, that's when you make your switch.
Yeah. One thing I heard this from Adam Schefter on the Mike and Mike show this morning. And it's driving me nuts because people keep comparing Teddy's injury to the other players who suffered the same or a similar injury. And he brought up
the same.
Well, no, but here's what he brought up. 18 similar injuries or the same injury. So he talked to trainers, football trainers. I think he meant NFL, but maybe even because Marcus Lattimore did it in college.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming that injury counts in this sample size. That 18 injuries with like the dislocated knee and blow out all the ligaments.
Yeah.
And 3 of them came back, to which I would say, okay, but if you're a linebacker and you do it, or you're Marcus Lattimore and your livelihood requires you to run a 4.5 40 at worst and cut, jump cut.
Yeah, yeah.
And not that there's no cutting or any of those things with quarterbacks. Like you should be able to escape pressure and run around. Like you have to be able to move. But to compare it to a linebacker who did the same thing or a wide receiver who's cutting in and out of routes at full speed,
yeah,
it's not apples to apples to me anyways.
No, you would like to know the positions because...
It's probably easier to come back as a quarterback. Not that it's easy, just saying, like compared to a running back.
Yeah, and just... You know, I was out there yesterday, and what can we glean from watching, you know, someone? But he did all the,
I gleaned quite a bit looking at the KSTP video.
Did you break it down? You saw what, Chipper?
I just saw a quarterback
just the first
drill.
Part of practice, though, right?
You saw bullets flying is what you saw.
But it's not team drills.
No,
it's
I saw individuals.
Like
and Zimmer even mentioned it yesterday that, you know, the one thing is that, hey, what do you need to see before you feel comfortable putting him in a game?
Uh-huh.
And, you know... Practices are controlled environments for quarterbacks. They wear the red jerseys. They don't get hit. They're not, really escaping the pocket. He said, you got to see them in uncontrolled environments. And I think Yoder asked him, well, do you ever get that in practice? He said, yeah, we have occasionally a guy break through, a pass rusher. But that's what you need to see is like, can he scramble away from a pass rush?
Or can he move?
But he's never going to get hit before a game. So that you can't answer that.
And I think the thing to keep in mind here too, because I sense that there's this, whoa, slow down factor here. And I get that, but none of us, or at least I'm not saying that I think this is going to work. I have no idea. He's coming back from a catastrophic. His knee blew up. What I'm saying is common sense tells you he's going to get the chance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So this is not the show, I don't think, saying, oh, Teddy's going to come back and you can replace Keenum and then it's going to be fantastic and it gives you this and it gives you that. All I think we've been saying is if you look at the schedule, if you look at who the starting quarterback is, if you look at the opportunity this team might have and you understand the head coach loves this guy.
Mm-hmm.
Common sense tells you that in the end, at some point in time this year, he's going to get a chance.
Yeah.
Short of something going really wrong, he's going to get that chance.
Yeah. I think Zimmer trying to pump the brakes is his way of saying, do I really have to answer this question every day? Is he going to be ready to play? Whereas,
you are actually, but that's fine.
Yeah. But that's
deal with it.
Yeah.
Right.
But you want to have expectations because he was not going to come back and 1 week and play that weekend. I mean, it's just not, that's not realistic. Mm-hmm. He hasn't practiced in 14 months, so you can't just come back and, okay, he's ready, here he is, And so he's going to need a couple weeks. I just think it's natural. This week, next week, bye. There's your 3 weeks they're not going to practice during the bye, but there's your 3 weeks. You're going to have to make a decision at that point, bring him off the pup the next week. Or, activate him. But he's going to play this year. I would be stunned if he doesn't.
Don't you kind of like Pat Shurmur's offense and the weapons around for Teddy?
Without doubt.
What he did in his first 2 years, and it was, decidedly average compared if you just look at the numbers. But it was an offense built to accommodate Adrian Peterson. Mm-hmm. It was much more old school. This just feels like that quick hitting intermediate stuff, yards after the catch, where he'd be able to really thrive.
Yeah, and I love that screen pass they had to McKinnon the other day. I mean, you incorporate
how about that play call. Some of that might be luck too. The Packers dialed up six guys on coming on pressure,
but the fact that they have it, in their arsenal, and the way. Thielen's playing when Diggs gets back, the way he's playing. I mean, you have two really, really good receivers. Rudolph is making catches. And so, I think the environment, the support around him, and, they haven't completely, even though Peterson's not here and now, they're down to their backups, they still haven't abandoned the run. They still have pretty good balance.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that also is going to help.
I found the game, December 3rd at Atlanta. So they play Thanksgiving. They play Thanksgiving Day in Detroit, and that starts a series of three consecutive road games.
Well, wasn't his first game at New Orleans?
And then,
thing is, 15, they're going to have like 14? Seven road games in 8 weeks.
Yeah,
so
and then they play.
And
then they play December 10th at Carolina. But in the middle of that three game road trip, they go and play the Falcons. I'm not saying he's going to start that game. I'm saying he gets into that game.
But the thing is you're going to have to. Keenum's going to have to screw it up bad. I mean, so far he hasn't.
Or injury.
Well, that's obvious. But
Mike Remmers could pull an Ole move and Case Keenum gets smoked by somebody.
But it's funny, Keenum sort of lives on the edge to where he had a couple of moments there.
He tries to throw so many more picks.
He had the one where he's on the run, and he threw one sidearm, and it was like in between his receivers and almost gets picked. And it's like,
Phil brought this up last week.
He dodges bullets,
and
that's for sure.
And I'm inclined to agree with it. The point is that Keenum eventually is going to have a Keenum game.
He is, yeah.
I mean, eventually there's going to be a three pick, what's going on, what's happening game.
But if you're 7-3... and he has a bad game, are you pulling the plug the first bad game?
If it's for Teddy, for Teddy, don't you want to play in my game today?
I mean, he throws a bad incomplete pass on Sunday, and I'm done.
You got the
quickest Falcons.
I love how you asked that question. Judd and I are both like, yeah,
just give me one shot to take it.
I think there's people who ask, I've been drinking a lot of Teddy Kool-Aid this week, and like, well, Phil, I got a text from a buddy who bets, like, who's made a living gambling on football games in his life before, and he said, like, why are you so high on Teddy? Like, you're overinflating what you thought you saw a couple years ago. And I said, here's why. So, yes, I probably have my quarterback beer goggles on because the Vikings, like, the Vikings give you 3 weeks of league average Case Keenum, and it's like, oh my God, sign into a 5-year extension.
Yeah.
Like, he's not Christian Ponder, sign into an extension. Yeah. Teddy Bridgewater in 2015, his last full healthy season, was the most accurate passer in the NFL, according to Pro Football Focus. Not completion percentage, accuracy percentage. He was accurate on 80% of his passes. Now, most of those are intermediate, 5 to 15 yards, 5 to 20 yards in the air. That's where you make your living as a quarterback. So he's accurate. He's better on third down than on first and second down, statistically. Mm-hmm. He's better in the fourth quarter than he has been in the first half. So there's a lot there. There's leadership qualities. I'm curious more than anything to see him if he's back and healthy.
And that's the thing I was just sitting here thinking. It's like, more than anything, you just kind of want to see where he's at.
Yeah.
If he's healthy enough to play, you sort of want to just see if he can get past this and get back on that trajectory that we all thought he was going to be on. But you just don't know.
Right.
It's just this great unknown.
The interesting thing, though, is what they decide to do for this year will completely impact his future, because the question is, do you give him a long-term extension? Do you hope he signs some type of small bridge contract? And if you do that, does he say, I'll hit the market, and now let's say the Dolphins come along and say, come on home, Teddy, and we'll give you 3 years. So that's where it's going to be intriguing, because you still did draft this guy in the first round with the intent that he was going to be your quarterback in the future.
Don't you think the more likely option would be both sides say, you know, let's get some kind of bridge deal, just a short-term deal to kind of...
Are you trying with these puns? You both said the word bridge deal.
Oh, yeah. But you know what I'm saying?
I was not trying.
I would be stunned if another team swooped in and said, we're going to give you a big deal.
Chipper, we're talking about the quarterback position here. I should be stunned, but when it comes to that position, nothing the teams do.
Adam Gase comes in with a boombox.
Don't you want to come to Miami?
Yeah.
The key would be to get Obadiah to switch allegiances. Yeah, right. So you get him a Bears jersey and you give him an incentive-laden fan deal. Yeah. I'm a Bears fan now.
Can we talk some Demery Croft with you when we come back here?
We already got Bridgewater go to another team.
Yep.
Yeah.
Roll the boat, Scoggins. Roll the boat, Scoggins.
Mackie and Judd.
Mackie and Judd are back.
Are you ready to kick it up?
On 1500 ESPN.
Stay up to date on the latest Minnesota sports news and what's happening at 1500 ESPN by signing up for the Sportswire Daily and News and Notes emails. The Sportswire Daily, that's your source for all things Minnesota sports, featuring the latest articles from 1500ESPN.com delivered to your inbox every morning. You can also be in the know about the latest 1500 ESPN giveaways, events, programming, and more with the weekly News and Notes email. To sign up, just look for the Connect tab at 1500ESPN.com.
If you surround yourself with turds, you're headed towards Turdville. If you surround yourself with elite people, you are headed towards elite things.
What does that say about Connor Rhoda then? He's calling Connor Rhoda.
Wow. Yeah,
Connor Rhoda's going to be very successful in life. He's going to be a businessman, and he's going to have great success.
I will say this, he is an outstanding young man.
It's possible he could play quarterback again in...
Well, very
the
likely.
Second half,
if you have an injury, he's your quarterback. And so he will play again this year, I can almost promise you, because something will happen that they'll need him. But you have to make the quarterback change. I mean, he was making so many killer mistakes in the red zone, and this is an offense that cannot just forego points. I mean, when they get down there, they have to score. They're not good enough to overcome interceptions in the end zone. He just it's happened pretty much every game. In this last game, there was like three or four things in that first half where it's just like, you can't keep going forward with this. I mean, you have to make a quarterback change.
Why did you think, because, I mean, up until that game, to me, it's not that he looked great, but he looked relatively in control. Watching that first half on Saturday, though, it looked like he was starting for the first time, not what, the fifth time?
It was funny. I was talking to somebody sort of connected to the program. That was the first time they felt like he was sort of shell-shocked.
Yeah, he looked flustered.
He just... Even when he made the first, was the first week where he threw the interception in the end zone, he came back and played well after that.
Yeah.
And other mistakes he had played, he'd kind of regroup. But this one, there's just one right after another. And it started with that second series where he drops a snap, their first and goal at the three, and he drops a snap. Now, second goal from the eight or whatever. And he just never really recovered. He took the knee on the one snap where he didn't have to. So, maybe this will clear his head, and I liked what Croft did. You know, maybe Michigan State sort of coasted a little bit and took their foot off the gas. Or some deceiving. Of that was
remember
a little
when
bit...
Tavares Jackson, you can think about this with like Christian Ponder did this a couple times against when they were down against Denver at home, and when teams soften up a little bit in the second half, it's really hard to gauge.
It is, but he made plays. I mean, the thing I do like about him compared to Rhode is their offensive line is young, they're beat up, they're moving guys. That's not very good right now. And so there's going to be some broken plays. Yes. And he can make something out of nothing. You saw it, I think, twice. The one, he had a pretty long run down the sideline. And so he's a guy that can scramble, move around, whereas Rhoda just doesn't have that in his game. And so he gives you that dimension.
That's what I didn't get. If you're going to run the offense that Fleck wants to run quite a bit, Connor's not a fit.
No.
I mean, the Maryland game?
Mm-hmm.
Read option, and there was no threat. You can't run that offense with him because you're going to get, as you said, your running back's killed, and no one's going to bite.
I always felt that way because they've been doing the same read option stuff with Mitch Leidner, too. And like Mitch Leidner, the last 2 years, I don't know if it's because he had foot and ankle problems. They've been running read option with non-running quarterbacks for like 3 years here. Like just drop back and hand off or throw.
The one thing Mitch would do is he was really good with the fakes. So there are times in the press box you'd say, "Oh, who has the ball?"
All in a huddle. Like,
but he would keep it, and that's the thing. He would keep it, and so I think that does keep the defense honest. At least there's that threat. Whereas when Rhoda was in there, the defense ends would just crash down. There was no threat whatsoever, and he would have that edge, and he still wouldn't take it, and so Croft will give him that, and just hope he toes the line and doesn't break any more rules.
Have you been able to? You're a college football enthusiast, and you watch games in the SEC, and so you watch coaches with probably a different eye than mm-hmm. I do or Judd. Is it too early to tell whether PJ Fleck has some coaching chops? Like, is it?
No.
What are your impressions?
No, I mean nothing that's happened so far has swayed me one way or the other. I mean, I felt like he's a good coach coming in here. You don't go 13-0 or 12-0 and go to the Cotton Bowl by faking it. I mean, it just doesn't happen.
And taking like a 2-star wide receiver out of high school and turning him into the number 5 overall pick.
Yeah, I mean, the guy can coach. Now, there's been some things that he's made some decisions or mistakes that kind of, I think, not give you pause, but it's like, when they're at Purdue, he brings in a guy who's never punted to punt into the wind because he thought, oh, it's a rugby style, we'll do that. It was like, I sort of felt like he was just overthinking that. Just use your regular punter. Things like that. A couple clock management issues. But nothing that really, oh my God, this is Tim Brewster. You know, this is not going to work. Nothing like that. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, and this is not an excuse, and they should have won some of these games, and I thought they'd be better than what they are, but the quarterback situation has been, not good. It's not been up to Big Ten standards.
Gopher football, Chipper, is weird, too, because it's like it's a team in town where people want to pounce. And like there's this need now to be like, well, this is all about, I mean, they won 9 games. Gopher football seems to have very little rational discussion around it. And I'm not quite sure why.
100%. 100%.
But it's either you don't get Gopher football and you are this and that. Okay, you're too big a fan. Yeah. Or PJ Fleck's a fraud, just like I told you it's Bruce. There's no like down the middle, just gray area. Hey, Fleck hasn't done a great job, but maybe he didn't get this. And that discussion doesn't seem to take place.
No, there's no sanity. He's recruiting really well. He just got a commitment from looks like a pretty you know, high level defense end that's going to help. And so, let's check back in 3 years, and then we'll have a more accurate snapshot of what he is as a coach. But I think there's things I like. I like the way they recruit. You know, this offense I think will work when you get better quarterback play in there. Tyler Johnson is going to be a big time receiver. I like some of the jet sweep action they have on offense. So, I mean, I like this offense. They just need better players.
Right.
Honestly,
no,
I mean,
you're
just
right.
Need better players.
Yep. We love our chip sessions on Thursdays.
Thanks,
man. Chipper. Thanks for coming
so
in.
Balls.
Yeah.
Hang in there.
We're
you should get back on track this week.
Wait, that's right.
No, that's not
going to
happen.
Take that, Saban.
That's right.
Lou Nanny joins the show when we come back.